From Texas Public Radio, this is Texas Matters, a weekly radio news magazine that looks at the issues, events, and people in the Lone Star State. Today on Texas Matters, the original singing cowboy of the silver screen, Gene Autry, and the New Deal.
Support for TPR comes from Texas Mutual Insurance Company, a workers' comp carrier dedicated to handling claims proactively and a commitment to helping injured employees and workers' comp policyholders get back to business. TexasMutual.com/claims.
I'm back in the saddle again, out where a friend is a friend, where the longhorn cattle feed on the lowly Jimson weed. I'm back in the saddle again.
This is Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Texas-born Gene Autry starred in 91 feature-length westerns. He recorded over 600 songs. He had 9 gold records. In fact, he was the first person to receive a gold record. His signature song, Back in the Saddle Again, sold millions of copies. Autry used the popular media of his time to put a fine point on the American myth of the cowboy, while also becoming a successful and admired businessman. But there's more. According to the book New Deal Cowboy, Gene Autry and Public Diplomacy, the cowboy crooner played a subtle but powerful role in promoting the reforms of FDR's New Deal through his movies, music, and public persona, though he was not formally part of any government propaganda campaign. Michael Duchemin is author of New Deal Cowboy, Gene Autry, and Public Diplomacy.
Gene Autry is the only star or celebrity in American history who has 5 stars on the Hollywood Walk of Fame. The mediums included live performance, sound recording, motion pictures, television, and radio broadcasting all at the same time. So no one's ever done that. That's one easy way to get a snapshot of it. Gene's biggest period is really pre-World War II, roughly 1937 to 1941 or 42. He was a major star during that period. He started out doing small live performances. He really got his big break on the radio in the 1920s. Sound recording followed that, and then eventually motion pictures.
In a vine-covered shack in the mountain, bravely fighting the battle of time, is a dear one who's weathered life's sorrow. 'Tis that silver-haired daddy of mine. If I could recall all the heartache, dear old daddy, I called you to bear.
So it was Gene Autry's story. He is from Texas, a native Texan, but he seemed to claim Oklahoma or as his home state.
Tioga, Texas is really his place that claims him. He was born in a rural area outside of Tioga.
But to very extreme circumstances, poverty.
Yeah, it was a small, his father was a horse trader, you know, trying to make a living. This would have been in the teens and into the 20s. And then he had an uncle who lived in Oklahoma. And so he spent a lot of time on his uncle's farm or ranch. He was born in Texas, but kind of grew up in Oklahoma, maybe a way to look at it. And then he got his first breaks out of Tulsa, Oklahoma, on the radio there, were really where his career took off.
But he worked as a telegraph operator?
Yeah, he was basically studying to be an accountant, and he was very good with numbers and very good with books and managing the business side of things. I think that's another special quality that Autry had that a lot of stars didn't possess. And so he was planning on being an accountant, and he got on with the Frisco Railroad. He was a night relief manager for the telegrapher. So he was be sending telegraph messages, you know, on the late shift. The legend is that Will Rogers came in to send his syndicated column to the newspaper late one night, and Gene Autry was working the telegraph machine. And so they got into a conversation. And at that time, Gene was trying to decide whether he should become a musician. He had a chance with the St. Louis Cardinals farm system to be able to play professional baseball. He was a shortstop, but he just didn't think he had a big league arm. That was really the one of the conversations he had with Rogers, and then played a couple of songs for him, and they chatted for a while, and then Rogers recommended that he try the music option.
He told him to go to New York City?
Yeah, he went to New York City during that period, too, to try to get his career launched. That's where was the heart of the record business at that time. That trip didn't really work out for him, and he went back to Oklahoma, and he was able to get on the radio in Tulsa first, and then from there, he was discovered, and he ended up going to Chicago, is where he really got his big breaks with WLS Radio, which was owned by the Sears Roebuck Company. And he was a spokesperson for Sears through most of his early career. In the early years, there was Gene Autry guitars and all kinds of Gene Autry merchandise that was being sold, especially in and around the movies when they started. He started in the movies about 33, 34, 35, and he hit his stride about 1936, and then from there, from 36 until about 42, he was number one among the Western stars, because they did a separate poll of Western stars every year, but he was also within the top 10 for all American film during that period with the biggest stars of the time. That's what we would call the Hollywood A-list today, and he was deep in it, and he made Western film and Western culture glamorous for audiences that, you know, kind of looked at the West as they do today from New York City, where, you know, it's kind of a niche and it's out there in Texas somewhere.
Where God and man are one, while the work is being done, sing me a song of my home.
You know, it's downright unsociable to spoil a fella's song like that.
I never did a thing.
You know you're on the wrong road and 20 miles from nowhere?
Well, isn't this the way to the Double D Ranch?
Yeah, this is Miss Sandy's road, but it's still quite a far piece on foot.
They said at the Rio Hondo that the foreman, Gene Autry, was looking for some riders.
I'm Autry. I do need some hands, but sure you can ride a horse?
I've ridden the toughest nags in the country.
What's your name?
Billy. Billy Stone.
Okay, Billy. Guess those city clothes had me fooled.
What's that?
Might be rustlers.
Oh, don't tell me they still steal cattle. That only happens in the movies.
Since the price of beef is so high, they're thicker than locusts. Bring this horse on in.
Oh, boy! Quiet, will you? Whoa!
What was it about Gene Autry that made him appeal to so many people, particularly during the Depression?
I think it was his authenticity. He came across as a real person and a person who really cared about other people, both in his actions in his life and in his music and his film, and people responded to that. They were looking for something real.
Shame, shame on you. Shame, shame on you. Can you hold your head up high, look each other in the eye? No, you can't. Shame on you. Shame, shame on you. Shame.
Your book, New Deal Cowboy, Gene Autry and Public Diplomacy, how does he fit into the New Deal, which was Franklin Roosevelt's idea to basically remake federal government and the services that they provide?
Yeah, there's kind of three aspects to that. He believed in America. He believed in Americanism. He was a very staunch supporter of the American culture and values. And when Roosevelt came into president, and Roosevelt's work in rural districts, and in particular bringing electricity and water, especially to rural areas across the country, some of the key New Deal programs, Autry believed in those programs. And so with the dire straits of the Depression, he started to support Roosevelt first, I would say, through the good neighbor policy with Mexico. And you would see in his films, Gene Autry would sing songs in Spanish. His leading ladies in some of the films would be Hispanic, Mexican, or Mexican-American women, typically. He never kissed on screen. That was another thing. There was no sex scenes. There was a lot of innuendo in the films, but there was tension that was built. But if he was going to kiss a woman on screen, he would basically lift his hat up and the kiss would take place behind the hat, but you never saw an on-screen kiss. So he would have been one of the first and earliest stars to imply kissing a Hispanic woman. This would have been in the late 1930s, these films that came out, like South of the Border, Down Mexico Way, and there's quite a number of them.
South of the border, down Mexico Way, that's where I fell in love when stars above came out. And now as I wander, my thoughts ever stray, south of the border, down Mexico Way.
Building stronger relations with Mexico and easing tensions along the border from Texas to California was really about behind that strategy. And they were hugely influential, and it also influenced Midwestern audiences across the country. The government reports during that period really discussed at length what we would today call the Hispanicization of the United States. And basically, in the 1930s, there was a projection that within 70 years, the United States would become increasingly Hispanic in its culture and its nature.
I am El Rancho Grande, I don't vivia. Había una rancherita que alegre merecía, que alegre merecía. De voy a ser tus casores, como los que el ranchero, de los comienzos de lana.
So I doubt that Gene Autry was crafting his films thinking about the changing demographics of America a century later. What was his motivation for, he included Latino actors in his films. He included plot lines that would take him into Mexico. He sang occasionally in Spanish. He romanticized going into Mexico. What was that all about?
Yeah, it was really about building stronger relationships between the U.S. and Mexico. And it wasn't Gene Autry. He didn't have script approval in those days. It was really Republic Pictures, who was in league with supporting the Roosevelt administration. And there were offices in the federal government that really helped create those influences in Hollywood. In the later years, Gene did get script approval from the studio, and he was able to create that influence, because the next two phases in this relationship or this support, the second phase was for the New Deal. And again, films and music and storylines that supported the New Deal in as it was taking over, especially through the Western states. During that period, you had a lot of working ranches in the West that were converting into dude ranches. And so you have a lot of scenes at these working ranches that are now accepting Eastern dudes to come in to go horseback riding. And there's now swimming pools and tennis courts at the ranch. There's a whole number of different storylines that go along with that, but that's one of the
things. Well, I don't know.
I'm good, mister. Honest, I am. I can ride and throw a rope, and I can even sing to them.
Well, you can?
Sure, listen. I'm an old cowhand from the
Rio Grande,
but my legs ain't bowed, and my cheeks ain't
tan.
I'm a tenderfoot who never saw a cow, never roped a steer, cause I don't know how, and I sure ain't fixin' to start in now.
Yippee-i-o-ki-yay. I'm an old cowhand from the Rio Grande, and I learned to ride before I learned to stand.
I'm a riding fool who is up to date. I know every trail in the Lone Star State.
Cause you ride the range in a 48.
A yippee-i-o-ki-yay. Yippee-i-o-ki-yay. I'm an old cowhand from the Rio Grande. And I go to town when I hear a band.
Do you
you know all the songs that the cowboys know about the big corral where the dogies go. Where'd you learn them all?
On the radio. A yippee-i-yo-ki-yay. Yippee-i-yo-ki-yay.
Say, mister, that's pretty solid.
And then after that, the third phase in that is really during the run-up to World War II. And so Gene Autry enlisted, and they did his enlistment live from New York City over the radio, and he enlisted live in as a recruitment strategy.
Well, Gene, getting back to this here enlisting business.
Yes.
You know, I'm mighty proud of you.
You are?
Yeah, but shucks, I know just gonna enlist. Yeah, ever since I seen that look in your eyes when them there Japs bombed Pearl Harbor.
Well, thanks, Shorty. I only wish there was some way that you and I could stay together. But our friendship can't be easily tossed aside. Who knows? Maybe we'll be together at that.
You know, Gene, I'm mighty proud of you, too, for enlisting, but I don't see why you didn't wait till they called you. You've got this lovely ranch and all those beautiful horses and, well, gosh, you've just got everything to live for. Oh,
yes, I have, Virginia, and, well, I've got just about that much more to be willing to fight for.
Yeah, that's right. Gene, it wouldn't be a violating those secrets or nothing, would it, if you told us how come you decided to enlist in the Air Forces?
Well, Shorty, because I like airplanes.
Oh, now, that ain't what I'm talking about, and you know it, Gene Autry. Now, tell us a sure enough reason you're enlisted.
Well, all right. I'll tell you one of the things that made me decide to enlist now. You've all had dreams where you could see everything real clear and plain. And scientists have proven that sometimes a long, complicated dream only lasts a couple of seconds. Well, one day not long ago, I was riding along in that wild, rough country north of here. The trail led me to the mountains. I'd been up all night looking for a crippled calf that had been strayed from the herd, and I was sleepy. Champion was walking along slow and easy, and I was sort of dozing in the saddle with the sun warm and friendly on my back. So I dropped off to sleep. I know I was dreaming because right away I saw something standing in the trail ahead of me. An old hermit. Oh, champion. Hello there, old timer.
Well, howdy, bub. Where are you going on that there beautiful horse?
Why, I'm on my way to join the army.
Oh, you be, eh? It appears to me that the horse don't think much of it.
Well, he's been in all my other fights, and he can't understand why I'm leaving him out here this one.
How come you're leaving him out?
Well, I'm going to use an airplane this time.
You mean one of them things that looks like an overgrown horsefly?
That's right.
Say, who are we fighting in this war anyhow?
Well, a fella named Schickelgruber, and he calls himself Hitler.
Yeah. What is he, a horse thief?
Oh, he's worse than that. He kills off women and little kids, even hundreds of thousands of them.
Great day in the morning. What for?
Well, he wants to take over their land, take it all away from them.
And they must have been eating loco weed. Why don't somebody shoot him?
Well, they can't get at him. He's sly like a coyote.
Well, a coyote don't kill nothing except to eat it.
Well, I'm not throwing off on a coyote. A coyote's a fine, upstanding citizen alongside of Hitler.
And he signed on to stay with the USO shows, basically, and the recruitment until there were 2 million men and women who were drafted or volunteered for the U.S. Army Air Corps. And then once they hit that 2 million mark, he asked to be relieved from the USO duty and spent the end of the war, kind of the mop-up period of the war, flying planes from the production yards in Burbank, California, up to Tacoma, Washington, as a test flight, if you will, and then they were loaded onto ships there and sent to the Pacific Ocean, for the Pacific Theater. So he would never really saw combat duty, but he did see some ferrying and shuttle transfer duty, and he did do some promotional flights, you know, over the hump in the Himalayas and a variety of other things. He did a kind of a around-the-world flight during that period, but he was too valuable to get anywhere close to combat, and so that never happened.
Yeah, still flying in those days and under those conditions had its risk. They're perilous. They offered Gene Autry a deferment, saying, you know, you didn't have to even enter the military if you didn't want to. He was a licensed pilot, and he says, I want to be in the Air Force, and he wants to fly.
You can't underestimate the patriotism that went with that. He did all those things because he thought it was the right thing to do, because he was a patriotic American. and he wanted to support the war effort as we got there. So with Roosevelt, there's really three phases: the New Deal period, the Good Neighbor policy with Mexico, and then the run up to World War II. And then after the war, Gene gets more involved in entertainment production and less being in front of the camera as a star. He's aging, and Roy Rogers has basically taken his place.
Well, look at that. No, it's oil on this water. Do you know what it means if they strike oil with that well over there?
Well, I reckon there'd be plenty of celebrating.
It means they drilled so many wells that there wouldn't be a stream in this country left with water fit for cattle to drink. This always has been a cattle country and always will be.
The films that Gene Autry starred in frequently had plot lines where he was challenging corrupt corporate interest who were either exploiting natural resources, trying to steal land from people. Was that part of the New Deal message about how these massive corporate interests were undermining the little guy? That's why we needed a New Deal.
Yeah, that's why. I mean, that's basically, those are storylines that come out directly out of Democratic and Republican talking points for politics during the period, and frankly, kind of continuing forward. The Democrats always represented the little guy, the guys working for wages, and the Republicans always represented the ranch owners, not the ranch hands, and the commercial and consolidated capital aspects. Those themes all revolve around kind of an East against West sort of idea, too. You have this influx of Eastern money, sometimes foreign money from Britain especially, but other countries coming into the Western states, buying up ranches, buying influence, and then the local folks, you know, really being against that. And Gene's audience were small town and rural people. Those folks are feeling put out by the big money coming in from back east and buying up the local ranch or buying the local meatpacking plant or whatever it is.
Just turn me loose, let me straddle my old saddle underneath the western skies. On my cayuse, let me wander over yonder till I see the mountains rise. I want to ride to the ridge where the west commences, gaze at the moon till I lose my senses. Can't look at hobbles and I can't stand fences. Don't fence me in.
So there was this Gene Autry's cowboy code. Number one, there's 10 of these. A cowboy must never shoot first, hit a smaller man, or take unfair advantage. Two, must never go back on his word or trust confided in him. Three, he must always tell the truth. Four, he must be gentle with children, the elderly, and animals. Five, he must advocate or possess racially or religiously intolerant ideas. Six, he must help people in distress. Seven, he must be a good worker. Eight, he must keep himself clean in thought, speech, action, and personal habits. Nine, he must respect women, parents, and this nation's laws. 10, the cowboy is patriotic. So is Gene Autry's cowboy code woke?
Yeah, probably. You know, but woke, if woke were, those were the values of the day, right? In small town and rural America. So yeah, I think if you framed it in that context today, this is why I don't think Mrs. Autry was really keen on my writing a book called New Deal Cowboy. She doesn't support the Democratic Party, but Gene was a lifetime. He was a card-carrying Democrat until the day he died. But it doesn't go with his image, right? And that image really changes in the 1960s when he gets his baseball team, which was it's the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim today. But he was awarded the Los Angeles Angels Pacific Coast League franchise to become part of Major League Baseball. And the first 4 or 5 years, the team played in Dodger Stadium on alternating days with the LA Dodgers. And Gene was headquartered at the Centennial hotel in Hollywood was basically his corporate center. He owned hotels also. He owned radio and television stations to broadcast the games. He bought radio and television stations, and he bought the team to have content. But in the mid to late 60s, he writes about in his own autobiography how he would have to step over stone kids, you know, laying in the street outside the hotel. And Gene just got sick of that. And he became much more conservative during those later years into the 60s, 70s, and 80s. But he didn't change his political affiliation.
During the anti-communist era of the United States, he took on a very patriotic message, frequently singing patriotic songs, talking about American values. And that's, I guess that stuck with his brand.
Yeah, I went even further than that. Like, you know, like many people, people changed their position on things. The 60s was obviously a very tumultuous time. But Gene was part of the loyalty oath program where, you know, various movers and shakers wanted people to sign a loyalty oath to the United States and were staunchly anti-communist. That movement was very strong in Los Angeles, and Gene was at the forefront of it. During that period, you know, it sounds very much like something we could see today, right? With asking people to sign a loyalty oath. But these movements are part of U.S. history. But you can see his thoughts changing in the post-war period. And by the 60s, you know, he's really kind of done with Hollywood and done with Los Angeles in large measure.
You know Dasher and Dancer and Prancer and Vixen, Comet and Cupid and Donner and Blitzen. But do you recall the most famous reindeer of all? Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer.
Nowadays, the only time anyone hears Gene Autry is during Christmas time with his Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer songs.
Right.
To have him one time everywhere in the media, dominant film star, and now he's... I mean, is he relegated to this sort of novelty position? Does he have a whole lot of cultural relevance?
Yeah, you know, he has a lot more cultural relevance than people know about. Gene Autry's story deserves to be told, and this book is kind of a toehold in telling that story.
Well, what about the idea that Gene Autry's story is America's story?
Yeah, it absolutely is America's
story. The transition from impoverished rural America and to mass media, popularizing American myths, becoming a global superpower, and then a disenchantment.
Right. Yeah. No, it's there's a nice through thread with all of that. With the emergence of things like the Westerns Channel, there's been a resurgence in interest and among young people in particular. The Westerns Channel did a lot to introduce Gene to a younger generation. That should not be gone unnoticed. And the Westerns Channel as an outlet really... not only for Gene Autry, but especially with Gene, kind of reintroduced him to a younger generation, and that continues to this day.
And he's back in the saddle again.
Exactly, yeah.
I'm back in the saddle again, out where a friend is a friend, where the longhorn cattle feed on the lowly Jimson weed. I'm back in the saddle again, riding the reins once more, toting my old 44, where you sleep.
Michael DeShaman is the author of New Deal Cowboy, Gene Autry and Public Diplomacy. It's published by the University of Oklahoma Press. That's it for this edition of Texas Matters. Thanks for listening. I'm David Martin Davies. Email us at texasmatters@tpr.org. There's past episodes of Texas Matters on our website at tpr.org, and you can download us wherever you find cool podcasts. And tune in again next week for another edition of Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio.